Daniel Wildermuth, Chief Executive at Wildermuth Wealth, is here, and we're discussing the endowment investment approach and interval funds now on The Navigator. Welcome to The Navigator, where we talk about all-weather active investing and plotting a course to financial success with the help of closed-end funds. The Navigator is brought to you by the Active Investment Company Alliance, a unique industry organization that represents all facets of the closed-end fund industry, from users and investors to fund sponsors and creators. And if you're looking for excellence beyond indexing, The Navigator is going to point you in the right direction. And speaking of fund creators and fund sponsors, today I am talking with Daniel Wildermuth, who's portfolio manager at the Wildermuth Endowment Fund. If you're interested in getting more information, it's ticker symbol WESFX for the A shares, but you can go to wildermuthendowmentfund.com. To learn more about closed-end funds, interval funds, and more, go to AICAlliance.org, the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance. Daniel Wildermuth, welcome to The Navigator.
Thank you so much. Very pleased to be here.
We need to start on the endowment side of things, because an endowment strategy, well, it's very broad. It frequently goes in places that standard stock and bond domestic kinds of strategies don't go. And it's a time horizon element. So let's start there and talk about the endowment investment approach and how it works.
The endowment investment approach, not surprisingly, comes from the fact of the people who use it the most are endowments. They were the ones who pioneered, starting with Yale University all the way back to 1985 with David Swensen. And the big thing that the endowment model really follows or effectively employs very, very generously is investment into private markets as opposed to simply stocks and bonds. That is the big difference. In fact, endowments that are generally north of $1 billion in size have at least 60% of their assets in what most would consider non-standard stocks and bonds. There's obviously differences in terms of exactly how they implement that, but that is the big difference, is that they've really, as you said, ventured into different sectors outside of the traditional asset classes that a lot of retail investors tend to follow.
Let's talk about how the interval fund structure and the endowment approach work together. What are the benefits of saying, I'm going to use the endowment approach in an interval fund structure?
The biggest reason that people like an endowment fund structure is that there is large exposure to private equity. And similarly, that's something that we've certainly employed generously within our fund. What the interval fund allows is illiquidity that goes with those types of investments. So if you have a standard open-ended mutual fund, which most people are very familiar with, you have a 15% limit on illiquid assets or assets that don't trade on a daily basis. Within an interval fund structure, you can go above that because you're only providing liquidity on a quarterly basis. And that allows you to offer liquidity with some of those types of assets, because you have other types of assets within the portfolio that you can provide investors opportunity to exit if they choose to, but it also allows you to have something that is not completely liquid. So that's the big reason that you tend to marry those two together. It allows you to have exposure to a very desirable asset class in private equity while still providing flexibility for investors, as opposed to a traditional fund structure, which might require a 10-year plus investment, which most people don't really get too excited about.
Unlike a traditional closed-end fund, you're not looking at assets that are trading at massive discounts. So they're still looking at you the way they would size up a traditional fund. For them, it's mostly, let's think about A, the approach, and B, that liquidity aspect, that whatever I'm putting in here, it's limited quarterly liquidity.
And that's the standard structure of an interval fund. So unlike a regular mutual fund where you can buy and sell daily, with an interval fund, you can buy daily, but you can sell on a quarterly basis. So it gives you liquidity because you can take money out on a quarterly basis, but it means you can't decide today that you want to take money out tomorrow or today. You have to wait for those predictable quarterly liquidation events. And for that, that basically gives the portfolio manager the freedom to invest in things that are somewhat less liquid. So it gives that opportunity for individuals to access private markets, but with something that's a lot more flexible.
When we talk about private equities in any type of mutual fund, there is always what would be considered a valuation concern. In other words, if their stock's not trading every day, you've got some sort of a fair market estimate that says, here's what it's worth. and how it moves along. We have seen so many developments in private equity, and it is such an important part of what you do. Are the concerns that investors have historically had about, like, hey, if I own a mutual fund and it has private equity, I could wake up one morning and they could have decided that company XYZ really isn't worth that, and I could see a big swing. Are those concerns somehow muted and, again, less likely to wind up impacting? Because even if that happens, investors can't exit just because it's Tuesday and the value changed?
The structure goes a long way toward effectively eliminating that possibility. To all the positions within a mutual fund, and this is one of the advantages of effectively interval fund structure, is every year you have to have an audit completed. That's according to GAAP standards. And those GAAP standards are very well defined. They follow AICPA guidelines. But there's very, very clear standards in terms of how those valuations can be done and what needs to be followed in terms of establishing those values. And that has to be done so throughout the year. So if there's any significant change, plus or minus, you know, they win a new contract or they lose something significant or get an approval or they don't, those companies, the values of those companies has to be updated because they effectively have to be valued throughout the year according to GAAP standards. There is some art to that, but there is a surprisingly amount of science in terms of how different valuation companies, for instance, we have to use an external valuation company that effectively assigns a range of values and we work with them to decide exactly what that value is. But basically for any significant event, those values are updated. And then if there isn't a significant event, but a certain amount of time goes by, say several months, they're updated again then anyway, just to make sure that those values are fresh. Obviously during 2020 with COVID, where you had values moving rapidly, we've had a lot of changes in value or a lot of revisiting what's happening within the companies. But it's really geared around that to make sure that basically buyers or sellers of the stock are getting what they're paying for, and they're basically paying or getting back if they're redeeming an appropriate amount.
Let's take that a little bit further, that discussion, because as you pointed out, COVID-19, well, it's affected the broad market tremendously. There have been certain areas, such as closed-end funds, took it more on the chin when things were happening in February and March, have rebounded, but are still in a territory that could be a little bit less than what people might have expected. What's happened in the private equity space, since that's such an important thing for you, with not just necessarily the companies that you've got, but the private equity space in general in terms of how it's responded through this?
Private equity has really kind of fallen into three categories. Think of the first category as companies that have been around for a while, they're established, they have a track record, and they were certainly existing and thriving or moving forward pre-COVID. Those companies in general, or if you have a fund of those types of companies, those companies are generally done well, especially if there's more of a technology focus. That's kind of one category. Second category are funds, or basically if somebody in a manager has a large pool of capital, because of dislocation within the market and some of the pressure on the different companies, having cash right now has become more valuable. And so those firms have also basically benefited, or that basically if you have the cash, that's a benefit to you because you're able to buy things generally at a lower discount. There was a lot of kind of a halt to funding, so there's new opportunities created if you have cash. The area of private equity or venture that has been a little bit, some might say adversely affected, are companies that are really nascent, early in their development. So they're either pre-development or they're just trying to get traction or they're disruptive market technology. But with all the other market disruptions from COVID, they may have had to struggle a little bit to gain traction in that space. So that is an area that possibly hasn't done as well. The flip side is that as we're starting to come out of COVID, those companies, sector tends to have done extraordinarily well long term. So it's probably more of a pause in the short term, and they will probably come roaring back. It's just they were likely a little bit more affected in the short term. So, you know, we kind of have two sectors doing pretty well, one sector which probably isn't slowed a little bit.
Daniel, very, very interesting. Thanks so much for joining me on The Navigator to talk about it.
Well, it was my pleasure to be with you today.
The Navigator is a joint production of the Active Investment Company Alliance and Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. I am Chuck Jaffe, and please check out my show on your favorite podcast app or at moneylifeshow.com. To learn more about interval funds, business development companies, and closed-end funds, go to AICAlliance.org, the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance. They're on Facebook and LinkedIn at AIC Alliance. Thanks to my guest, Daniel Wildermuth, the chief executive at Wildermuth Wealth, the portfolio manager for the Wildermuth Endowment Fund, where the A shares trade under WESFX. Learn more at wildermuthendowmentfund.com. The Navigator Podcast is available every Friday. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast app and join us again next week to learn more about investing with closed-end funds. Until then, stay safe, everybody.